Good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Tim and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
I'm going to go over a few things. Housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity.
To accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms behind us exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome anyone. If there is anybody on Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men, fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12, the second half of it. Please welcome our panel this evening, Mickey and Walt. I will read the first paragraph. Let's see, on page 96, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. So we're on step 12, carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So on page 96, suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Which one of y'all would like?
I'm Walt Reed, alcoholic.
Hey, Walt.
So I love that that paragraph. You know, it's I wish that the people I've worked with in the past had as much willingness as this person says. I mean, he obviously right away committed that he wants to work the 12 steps. So for me, that tells me right away that he's got more than a little bit of willingness. And so my job, I see at that point, is to share my what it was like for me at that moment in my sobriety, not to get preachy, not to, you know, throw the whole program at him right away, but to just share what it was like for me at that moment in my sobriety when I was in his shoes and I had a shred of willingness, but probably a lot of skepticism underneath, because that was what my experience was at the time. I wasn't a believer in AA right away, not at all. And so for me, I had just enough willingness to want to try something other than myself. And that was a change. That was a big change. But I had exhausted all my excuses and alibis. And so, you know, I've had some experiences where I started a couple meetings in Ohio and in this one church that we wanted to get a meeting into because it was the biggest Catholic church in this area. It had 12,000 families. So that was a lot of people, and it did not have an AA meeting. And so couple of us and people I knew, we kind of got weaseled our way in there to get a meeting in there. It was just so that we could get it in the bulletin to make it available. But as a byproduct of all that happening was that the parish pastor would call me and say, you know, so-and-so's got a problem with alcohol. Will you meet with them? And there was a couple of times where I was in a hospital setting meeting with somebody, you know, and not one of those times did that those people that I got sent to asked to be 12-step. It was a family member. It was somebody that went through the priest that kind of made it happen. And, you know, all I could do in those situations is share that there's some hope out there, share what happened to me, and then plant some seeds. None of those guys ever, to my knowledge, came to an AA meeting, but the ones that came on their own that had a willingness, a shred of willingness, there was some light there. And I think that's, you know, early sobriety, that willingness, that's really, really crucial that we get them over the hump and maybe to investigate a little further. So that's what I have on that.
Mickey, alcoholic.
Hey, Mickey.
I don't know if I've ever actually worked with anybody that read the entire volume before I met with them on the second time. That's not been my experience at all. But what my experience has been is I like to find out on the first meeting about how willing the person is. Like, I really like to ask that question on whether or not they're willing to go to any length. And depending on the answer to that question is how I proceed from there. If a person answers that question that they're willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol, then I really love to get somebody into the book and try to get them into the steps before they have the chance to what I call wake up. Because I feel that if you there's just so much hesitation after somebody comes into Alcoholics Anonymous and they get all this feedback from so many different people about how to do things or how not to do things or what you're supposed to do, or what you're not supposed to do. I just think that you should get somebody under your wing and take them through the steps and get them going as soon as you can. So usually by the time I meet with somebody on the second time, we're meeting in my garage and we're already starting to go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's the way that it has been best laid out for me anyway. I remember that in the very beginning, like I was on my 4-step when I had 4 months of sobriety. And I remember my sponsor was asking me at that time, he's like, "What's your rush, man? Why are you trying to do this so fast?" And I was like, "Well, I'm not." He said, "Why are you trying to speed through the steps?" And I said, "I don't really necessarily think I'm trying to speed through the steps, but I just keep hearing these people say that you're going to drink if you don't do this. And I just don't want to drink. So whatever it's going to take for me not to drink." And I don't think that he was really schooled on like taking people through the steps the way that I was ready to. I mean, I was just ready. I was ready for whatever the change was going to take place or whatever this was going to offer me. I was ready to take it. So anyway, it's been a proven success to me that to just get people in the steps as soon as you can. Thanks. Let me share.
Thanks, Mickey. All right. Second part of this is on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely on our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God.
Yeah, Walt Reed, alcoholic again. You know, I've often heard you can't carry the drunk, you can only carry the message. And I like to remind myself of that whenever I'm working with anybody. I don't want to get too emotionally invested myself that it becomes an issue. I have to kind of play it off them. Is, you know, again, go back to the willingness. If they've got the willingness initially, but they don't have any understanding, then I try to give them some understanding and I try to give them some hope. I try to get them to as many meetings. I'm a big guy on meetings. The big book is great. The steps are fantastic, but meetings, I kind of like meetings in early sobriety because they get exposed to lots of people with lots of hope. And for me, that's what I needed. You know, I needed to hear all of that. I was very standoffish. I wasn't the kind of guy that was going to warm up to anybody. I didn't trust anybody. And I certainly wasn't going to be honest to the degree that was necessary early on. So by going to meetings and connecting and being welcomed and being part of a group, that made all the difference in the world. And I wanted what they had. And I could see it in other people, not just my sponsor. I didn't have a sponsor right away. I had a sponsor within maybe 6 weeks. But that first 6 weeks I didn't. I didn't know if I was staying. I would have bet that I wasn't staying. So for me, but when I got that sponsor, and I was a little bit standoffish, but I was honest. By then I had a sense of what AA was, and I wanted more. I want what he had. He shared some good stuff, and he didn't seem to do it in a preachy kind of way. He did it with some humility, and that was new and different too. I'd listen to people who were always selling stuff, and I was so skeptic of anybody that was selling stuff. I heard that everywhere, and I was like that. You know, bullshit artist, telling, you know, whatever. Talking out of both sides of the mouth, telling you what you want to hear, meanwhile trying to manipulate. I was so jaded when I came to AA that that's what I looked for in everybody. And I didn't hear that in meetings. I heard something different. You know, I heard the honesty. I heard the humility. I heard acceptance. And I heard that people were happy and joyous and free in their own lives by just doing this thing called a spiritual solution, which kind of befuddled me too, because it wasn't a church. It wasn't a religion, but yet it was based on a higher power. So I was intrigued, and I was encouraged by my sponsor to go to as many meetings. He didn't go to all the meetings with me, but he sent me out. You know, I saw him every week a couple of times, but I went to as many meetings as I could, and I heard the message. And I got the message from a lot of people, not just a sponsor. So I didn't come to depend on a sponsor. It was never offered to me that way, that my recovery was contingent on my relationship with a sponsor. It wasn't that way at all. He was there as a resource to get me through the steps and to not let me veer too far off. And, you know, he waited for me. He waited for those teachable moments. He didn't force feed me at all. And believe me, with ego and all that, I didn't believe I had an ego. There was so much that I was in denial about that he probably saw, but never mentioned. He let me grow at my own pace. And I really appreciated that. So that's kind of how I work with other people. I can only share my own experience. And that's kind of how I do it for me. I don't radically change what I was exposed to. I get people to feel as comfortable as I can in meetings. I introduce them to everybody I can. If I'm a sponsor, I often say I'm a temporary sponsor. If you find somebody better, that's a better fit for you, that you feel more honest with or more comfortable with, go for it. But I'm here for you too. That's all I got. I pass.
Hey, well, thanks. Mickey alcoholic. So we had this at one of the meetings, and this guy was saying that he couldn't stop drinking if he didn't have his cell phone. So I kind of recited that thing out of the book, and I said, nonsense. I said, it says right in the book, having taken very hard knocks to learn the truth, job or no job, wife or no wife, cell phone or no cell phone. But says we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of the dependence of God. And I was like, I was really lucky when I was getting sober. And like I had this sponsor, man, and I was really in tune with them. But I also talked to other people that I thought were working a program. Anybody that I deemed to kind of look up to a little bit, like I appreciated what they either were, not just what they were saying, but the way that they were walking, like they were part of the group. Like I could see people doing things for the group. And the reason I say that is because like within the first 90 days, this guy, it was between 60 and 90. And this guy taught me to say these prayers, which kind of like goes right along with those statements, because like I truly believe that, you know, this has to do with God's going to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. But on the flip side of that coin is God's not going to do for us what we can do for ourselves, right? And that's a hard road to hoe. Like I can pray until I'm blue in the face, but God's just not going to keep me sober. No, there's things I got to do. I got to show up to meeting. I got to get a sponsor. I got to do some work in the steps, because the steps is where the answer is. So I can do all kinds of things, but if I'm dependent on other people, but this guy taught me how to say these prayers. directly to God. Like I didn't, and I didn't want to have nothing to do with what that guy was talking about. That guy called me on my crap that night. He said to me, he said, Mickey, you know, if you do pray, because he kind of cornered me on the phone. And he asked me, he goes, let me ask you, do you pray? And that was him and then hiding around the bush. And he said, look, that was a yes or a no question. And I said, okay, no. And he said, well, let me tell you something. If you do pray, there's no way it can hurt you. And that astounded me. Like nobody ever approached me about prayer like that. Everybody always just kind of was pushing things, like Walt was saying, just pushing things down my throat about the way that I should do things and I had to do things. And that guy just told me, he said, there's no way it can hurt you if you pray. And he got me to get on my knees that night. And I'll never forget it, man. I was like 69 days sober. I got on my knees and I said, God, if you're even, I said, Ben's God. Because the guy's name was Ben. I said, Ben's God, if you're even up there and if you even give two shits about me, just keep me sober for the next 24 hours. And then the next day he taught me to say these prayers. Please remove the obsession and the compulsion for me to drink and use any mind-altering stimulants away. And I'm telling you, within 2 weeks after saying those prayers, my obsession to drink and use any drugs was lifted, and it has never come back in the entire time that I've been in recovery. Now, I'm not saying that there's not things that I've had to do to keep that at bay, because like I said before, God's not going to do for you what you can do for yourself. And if I'm not walking this road, I can't expect God's going to walk it for me. God's going to guide me. God's going to give me the courage and the strength, but he ain't going to do it for me. And I just wanted to read this thing because, like, this is so super powerful. You know, we're reading off page 98. We were reading on page 96 a minute ago. But it says, do not be discouraged. This is one of my favorite paragraphs in the book. It says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. This is it right here. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Because what you offer, that's what people don't get. Like what we're offering is a life beyond your wildest dreams for somebody that's dying. I mean, you can't see it in the beginning, but it is. This way of life offers things that you can't find anywhere else, that you can't buy with any amount of money that you have. You have to work for it. And this is what shows you how to do it. It is freaking phenomenal. But also what it says is, don't chase the person down. Don't beat them with a stick and pull them into Alcoholics Anonymous. It ain't gonna work, right? Seek out another alcoholic and try again. You know, people all the time think that they suck at sponsorship and that everybody sucks at sponsorship in the beginning. That's just the way it is. That's the nature of the beast. The only way that you can fine tune your skills is to practice on another person or have success with a person, walking them all the way through the steps and continue to sharpen your skills along the way. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks a lot.
Sharon.
This is the end of this first part on same thing on page 98. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. That's a short word.
Walt Reed, alcoholic. So, one of the things that everybody has in common, almost everybody, if not everybody, is when they come into AA, they've got a mountain of problems. They didn't get here by, you know, I had one drunk and I ended up and got a DUI and I'm in AA. It's usually they've got all kinds of problems. At least in my case, I had financial problems. I had two divorces in 3 years, had kids in different states. I was in trouble in my job. My whole life was collapsing. And, you know, I didn't come into AA, me personally, the day that I came to AA, I didn't come to fix those things. I came because I didn't want to drink. And I think that's a little different than most people. Most people, they they try AA or they get sent AA or they get referred to AA or their employer makes them go. But the thing is I've worked with people and they always have this litany of problems, which are and sound which sound like excuses at first. At least that's what I hear. I hear, I can't do this because all these problems, or you know, I can't make a meeting. I can't go to the meeting tomorrow because I have, you know, all these problems. And, you know, I have to practice patience at that point. And that's a tough one for me, but I have to bite my lip. And all I can talk about is my own story and about how I was not a believer in this process and didn't come in here to change my life. I came in to find a way not to drink. And that's what I wanted initially. But what I found, and then I get into the solution for me and for others, finding the solution to the drinking problem, somehow all the other problems die of neglect. They just sort of kind of fade away. They tend to get worked out, you know, and that was the beauty of it. And I had a tough landing. I've never had a relapse, thank God, but I had 1,000 relapses before I got here because I was trying to run my life. And I thought I could work on my recovery. My idea was if my drinking got bad enough, I would find the solution to my problem. It would be me. All ego, all self-centeredness, but I was going to solve my problem. And that's a layer of denial that finally got broken. And I see a lot of newcomers, they come in that have that same kind of attitude because it's pride, it's ego, it's what they've been told all along. You're a real man if you do this or that, or you stand up and you're accountable and you're, you know. But for me, I had to have that part of it knocked down. And that's what I try to concentrate. If I have a willing sponsee, I want to talk to him about the disease and the solution and the revolution in the thinking about one day at a time. All those problems, they're going to be here tomorrow or not. But what we have really is right now. And that's what I focus on. And I get them to think that. And for me, that was a revolution in my focus and perspective and the way I looked at life. I didn't look at life at all that way. Life was this big play, this big act. And I had lots of levers to pull and manipulate to try to get to where I was trying to go. And for me, the revolution in that was, nope, alcoholism requires I stay in the moment, I stay in the present, I stay in reality, and I focus on what's happening right now. And I have a higher power to deal with my fears about those things tomorrow and the regrets and all that about the past. And so when I have someone come at me like in that paragraph before with all these problems and that, I kind of try to get it to that way. This right now is what you have. This is the moment in your life when you're at a crossroads where there's a solution and it requires you to let go of how you lived before about regretting the past and how you have all this fear about all these outcomes that you can't control. And I try to use the serenity prayer. For me, in early sobriety, that was a huge first aid bandage for me. That was the thing that stopped the hemorrhages was that simple prayer, because it got me to think about what I can control and what I can do in this moment, which is rely on a higher power and have some, you know, maybe some faith that I'll do the right thing. And that was a change in my thinking that it gave me a new way that got me down the road a little further into recovery. And so when I'm working with a newcomer, that's what I try to do initially, is to get them over to that other side, to start thinking about one day at a time, having a higher power, whatever that is, and moving forward.
Thank you, alcoholic.
Okay.
I really like the way that the book was, the words that they choose. Really find them kind of colorful sometimes. What I mean by that is, like, somewhere in there it says that most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they're willing to do something about their problem, right?
Yeah.
So, like, try to use the word mangled and not see that person kind of contorted in some kind of way, right? Like, pretty badly mangled. And so in the beginning of that paragraph, it says, burn into the consciousness of every man. Like, burn into the consciousness, right? I mean, those are pretty colorful words. I mean, think about that. Like, I mean, that, he's being, like, real about that. Like, burn into the consciousness of every man that he can get sober and well regardless of anybody else. I don't give a darn what's going on in your life. Like, if you go through this process and you do what they say to do when they say to do it, you can get well regardless of anything that's going on. Like, set it to the side. Deal with it later. You know, like how many times has it been revealed that no matter what your problems are, right? When you're trying to get sober, like, you just set them to the side. And how many of those problems go away by themselves when you're just getting sober, right? They just vanish. Like, what happened to them? Which kind of brings, never mind.
Story time.
So one of my sponsees gave me this card one time, and he was really sick and he was getting ready to pass away. And he said, this was the first prescription Dr. Bob ever wrote in AA. And it was on his Dr. Bob's prescription pad. And it said right on there, trust God, clean house, and help others. And he had it laminated and he said, I want you to have this. And that guy passed away and he gave that to me. And I've treasured that thing forever, man. Like I can tell you exactly where it is right now. I mean, it's in my view when I'm at work so that I can just pay it. I can see that. I mean, really, that's where it is. Trust God, help, or clean house, trust God, and help others. It's phenomenal. Thanks, let me share.
Thanks. All right, this is part two. It's on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family, and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incapable people discover they have a bias upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
Yeah, this is the tough stuff right here. This is the real Walt Reed alcoholic, not the fifth time, but this is the tough stuff. You know, I tread really lightly when I'm working with somebody when they start telling me about the family kinds of issues. It's that's a different kind of dynamic. I almost always invariably go to the you've got to put your sobriety first. You aren't going to be able to help anybody, and so your recovery has to come first. And what does that mean? Because for everybody, that means something a little different. If it means a certain number of meetings, it means the service work. It means getting into the steps. It means having that higher power and using those prayers and using all the tools early on. Maybe that's what it means. But for some people, maybe it's something different, you know, and I have to be careful with that because sometimes, you know, sick people kind of attract each other. And sometimes spouses are, you know, pretty out there, pretty far out there. And, you know, it's tough. It's an individual thing. I've had some sponsees that didn't, you know, they were in the middle of a marriage falling apart. I've had some other sponsees where their marriages, you know, blossomed because of recovery, because it was like, you know, the wives would think I'd done some miracle with their husband and had done nothing really except get him in AA, but because it changed things at home, and that's the good stuff. But for others, it's not always that way. So for me, I tread lightly. I was fortunate, I guess, or unfortunate. I had two divorces. I didn't have a spouse at the time I came to AA. So I really could focus on my recovery. And my kids were in different states and I loved them, but I died inside about that, but I found a way to make that work by trusting God and having a higher power. That kind of drove me closer to reliance on a higher power, that fact that I had no control over that, and yet it was so important to me. So all I can do with a sponsee or with somebody I'm 12-stepping is to try to share what I know and maybe what I know about somebody else and bring somebody else into the picture, like so-and-so has an experience just like the one you're describing. Let's talk to him. You want to? Try to get it going like that and use that because, you know, I don't want terminal uniqueness. I don't want somebody to, because I've heard that so many times. Well, I'm different than everybody else. You know, they don't have my problems. This situation's, you know, it's beyond the rooms of AA. I need professional help. And that might be true. But as long as they're focused on not drinking, not taking that first drink, and doing what they're supposed to do for their recovery, which is number one, they got a shot and they can stay in the game. Things will work out. So I kind of like try to leave them with some hope and promises. And, you know, it's, but it's a tricky situation. No doubt about it. Dealing with families in early sobriety.
Thanks, Walt.
Mickey, alcoholic.
What, Mickey?
I wasn't married when I went to get sober, and I didn't have any children. And I kind of thank God for that on my own side. However, I was involved with this girl for 3.5 years. We were supposed to be getting married, and the day that I got sober, I terminated that relationship. And I just knew that there, somehow I intuitively knew that there was no way I was going to be able to get sober and stay in that relationship at the same time. And it was the best thing I ever did, although it was really hard because I felt like I was letting go of my two best friends, her and alcohol. And I'm walking around. I was really angry. anger might have been like an understatement. More like I was very rageful. And I felt like I was walking around with my feelings on the outside of my skin, and people were bumping into me. And it was, I didn't like that. It was very painful. But again, in here, he uses words that are pretty colorful. That he says that this should be avoided like the plague. Like argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. I mean, that's a really powerful statement. I mean, when you think about, I know that there's a story in there somewhere where the guy's wife was nagging him about either smoking too much or drinking too much coffee, and the guy went out and drank. And then they come back and said that has been resurrected and that she does not nag him about the coffee or smoking no more. Like, hell yeah, because it ought to be avoided like the plague. Like, look, I'm trying to get sober. Let's let everything else like go by the wayside for a little while here. Let's deal with one thing at a time. I'm telling you, man, trying to get sober is like, I did not view alcoholism when I got sober the way that I do today. Like I looked at it like I drank too much. It caused some troubles. You know, I really need to stop drinking. I look at alcoholism today as it's one of the most deadly things that I've ever seen. Like it will attack you from any angle it can get in. And like, it's a miracle and a blessing to even own the seat that I'm sitting in, Alcoholics Anonymous. After I got sober, it's freaking phenomenal. This is the best thing that has ever, ever, ever happened in my life. I'm done.
All right, thank you, Mike. All right, now we go to part three of this is page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
Yeah, Walt Reed, alcoholic. Yeah, that says a lot right there. That is the value of recovery right there. That's the value. That's what I discovered in my own. That was it. I remember, you know, I was a year sober and I had got stationed in Phoenix, Arizona. And so my two children were in Albuquerque and I was trying to get the visitation changed so that I could fly them a 1-hour plane ride to Phoenix once a month on a weekend rather than have me have to go all the way to Albuquerque every month and stay in hotels and eat in restaurants and all that sort of thing. And I know that we're talking about newcomers here, but this is the story I tell people when they're facing these early issues that are, you know, pretty heavy stuff, and they're trying to stay sober, yet they're being tugged with their emotions in different directions. And so for me, I used the program. I really had to trust in God. And I remember being in this lawyer wanted me to settle. My lawyer wanted me to settle and say, okay, for 6 months of that, I was going to have to continue with the old way. And then we'd transition into this. Well, I was only going to be in Phoenix for 2 years. And it was like, I'd already been, you know, gone to Washington State for 3 years. I really needed to shore up relations with my kids in my mind. And I thought that was kind of unfair. And I didn't know what to do. And I was working the program And the old me would have just blown a gasket and just started yelling and things like that. But I didn't. I didn't do anything like that. I simply turned my head to the wall and said the serenity prayer and asked God to tell me what to do. And I don't know, the thought was in my head, you know, you don't have to listen to the lawyer. You can ask the judge. And so I told the lawyer, I'm going to ask the judge in a few minutes when she comes in. And she came in. And I did just that. And she took the two lawyers and set them over to the side. And she brought her and me up there and basically gave me everything I wanted. My support was fine. And it was totally different. When we had gotten divorced 3 years before that, that same judge wouldn't even look at my papers, wouldn't look at anything. It was all one way. But this time it was different. And I think back of that. And I, you know, that was God. That was God for me. That was early recovery. That was one of the promises coming true. Just because I didn't act the way I used to act and because I had a little faith to try. And so, you know, sometimes early people in early sobriety, they have all these problems and all these things and they have no hope. And they just, because they have a record of behind them of screwing lots of things up and having things always go bad. And so they don't have a lot of faith. And so this is kind of a chance when those situations present themselves to actually rely on a higher power and see what happens, to trust and to use the program. You know, we talk that a lot, but that's what it looks like. It's not just saying, I mean, that's how it works in real life. It's like in those moments of using the tools that you hear in the meetings and relying on a higher power for me made all the difference in the world. So when I first came in, they talked about a spiritual solution. I didn't believe that for a second. I thought that has, I always believed in God. That is not going to work. I went to church drunk. I got thrown out of midnight mass for knocking over Christmas trees, drunk out of my mind. And staggered off and drove. I mean, I couldn't even walk and I was driving. I mean, that's, I had some spirituality, but it was so misdirected and I didn't rely on anything. And a lot of times people coming into AA, you know, they have a spiritual life, but it hasn't worked. So they're kind of dubious about it. But this is a program that's different. This is relying actually on every aspect on a higher power and getting direction rather than me assisting God. It's me depending on God to tell me what to do in the moment. What's the right thing for me here? What am I supposed to do? Not acting selfishly, taking that out of the equation. So it's quite a learning process. But if somebody gets to this point where they need that tool, that's when I kind of really, that's the difference maker for me. That's what it all boils down to. That's
Mickey, I'll call it.
Okay. It's a really powerful paragraph. You and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. It doesn't say like you meet this guy, you help him occasionally, you know, it says that you meet this man and you walk with him day by day. It doesn't talk about letting that guy go. It talks about really helping him. And, but what it says in there, when we look back, we realize the things that came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands, like, well, I never put myself in God's hands before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, like my life was run on self-will, run riot. Like I did what I wanted to do with my life. And I mean, that's one of the reasons probably I got here pretty soon. I mean, I got here when I was 26 years old. I was instructed. My life didn't make any sense at all. Now, when I look back now, when I put my life in God's hands, like after they taught me in here, that the things that came to me were much better than I could have ever like derived by myself. And it's absolutely incredible to like look at that part of it. So then it says, follow the dictates. And I use this because like I read the book to the man. Like we don't read together. Like I read to the person and they follow along. That way I don't fall asleep while I'm trying to help somebody when they're reading, right? I read, they listen. But so when you're talking to a guy, I mean, think about it, man. Like sometimes we lose the concept of what it was actually like when we were walking in here and how much destruction was going on in your life. But it comes to life when you're telling a guy, follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And the guy says,
You're full of shit. Don't you know what's going on in my life? Right? Because look at all the, look at everything that's happened. I'm getting ready to go to court, or I'm getting ready to go to jail, or I'm going to lose my kid, or I've already lost my job, all this stuff, right? They don't understand. They don't. So that's when it's good to know where to reference different things in the book. So like when I'm telling a guy this and they bring that to fruition, right? I always go back to this because I call this to remove the whiners from Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? And it says, his alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression was so great, we felt his only hope through what we called moral psychology, and we doubted if that would even have any effect. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book, and he is as fine of a man as you could wish to meet, as fine of a specimen of man as you could wish to meet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to have different ways. Like, this guy's depression was so great. He, like, they didn't think anything was going to help him. However, he became sold on the ideas contained in this book, and he hasn't had a drink for a great many years, right? So I had this sponsee say to me this one time, and I'll just use this as an example. He came in, he's like, I'm getting kicked out of the Navy. I'm like, my life's over. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is just so horrible. I'm over. I'm done. And I said, I'll tell you what, let's just concentrate on recovery and let's just go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and just see what happens. Let's just try it. What do you have to lose? If you think your life's over already, then you don't have anything to lose. Let's just see what happens, okay? So we went through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't kick him out of the Navy. The dude got transferred to Italy. And while he was in Italy, they decided that they were going to do a memorial for the 911 building that collapsed in New York. And they had this piece brought over to Italy, and they were going to put it up in town, right, on this big stand. And they picked my to do that, to take that piece and put it up on that stand. I mean, that, like, that just makes me cry, man, because, like, the guy was ready to, he was ready to just give up, and he was ready to, like, die. He was ready to just kill himself, and he didn't, because somehow, like, he got convinced. Sometimes, I hate to say this, but this is really the way that I believe it is that I need to fine-tune my skills of working with other people in Alcoholics Anonymous to make this stuff palatable for somebody to stomach one spoonful at a time. It needs to be fed to people a little tiny bit at a time so that they can handle it. And not every person's going to be the same way. I can't give it to every person the same way. Some people are stronger. Some people need to be knocked down. Other people need, they need a gentle person to just be loving and caring, but they need somebody to give it to them. So then the other thing that happened to that guy was after leaving Italy, the guy got transferred to Hawaii to this new job that got created, and he was the only one picked for that job. And I often tease that guy. I'm like, hey, man, you remember when you first, when we first got together and stuff, and you're like, my life's over. I don't know what I'm going to do. I might as well just kill myself now. And I'm like, well, imagine if you wouldn't have just bought a little bit of time, you know, because he works with other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, and that's one of the stipulations. Like, it doesn't say this in the book. And I know this is going against the rules. But I tell somebody right from the beginning, here's the deal. If you're at the end of this, if you're not willing to help other people, I'm not taking you through the steps. Because that's just the deal. Like, we're wasting each other's time. If you're not willing to continue to do this as we go along, I'm not helping you. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Mitch. All right, next part is also on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded of alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem.
Yeah, Walt Reed alcoholic. Yeah, for me, this is pretty cut and dried. I don't seem to see any issue with that. It's like, if they're still thinking alcohol is the problem, then alcohol is going to be the problem. I mean, it's they're not going to have a spiritual solution. They're not going to have a spiritual life. They're not going to be spiritual fit because they're running their life on their own self-will. If alcohol is still the problem, that means they haven't changed enough. Now, I'm not saying somebody can't have a bad day. I know that when in early sobriety, I had tickets, plane tickets from Washington State to go deer hunt like I'd always done when I could, back in Michigan in my hometown with my father's old friends who were all alcoholics. And that year I had about 3 months sobriety when November came around, and I just ate those tickets. I didn't want to take the risk. I didn't want to go back there and tempt myself. I just didn't. I liked what I was getting. Now the next year, 15 months after I got sober, I went back and I did that, and I was spiritually fit. I wasn't the least bit, you know, tempted to drink or anything like that at all. I was in a different place totally because I had worked the program. And so for me, that's what the program is. You know, I'm hardwired differently now. If I'm working my program, I'm relying on a higher power. I know my character defects. I know where my pitfalls are. I can walk through life. I can see things coming a whole lot different. I know where the triggers are because those are my character defects. So if something's bothering me, I take an inventory. I address it quickly. I don't let it spin out of control. And I, you know, it's not my will. It's you know, I'm trying to seek a higher power's will for me. And so that enables me to do just about anything I need to do. Now, do I run around to bars? No, I don't. I wouldn't enjoy it, quite honestly. I never have. Do I avoid it like the plague? No. No, not at all. But I always take an internal inventory of myself. How am I feeling right now? Am I okay with what's going on? I can be around people drinking. I don't want to be around people drunk. I really don't. That's not cool for me. I don't like it. It's not that I'm tempted to drink. I just get nauseated by it. And I get reminded how bad I was. You know, I was like that, no doubt about it. And I don't really want to think about that too much. I really don't. So for me, if I'm working my program well, and I tell the guys I sponsor, have a plan. Always have a plan. If you're going someplace, wedding reception, have a plan. I knew that I had done pretty good in recovery when I went to a wedding reception and sang karaoke in front of about 200 people dead sober. And I don't sing. I'm terrible at singing. And I did that. And I thought, that would have never happened in a million years. I'm singing Johnny Cash to all these people. And it was like, huh, okay, I must be okay with myself now. Because, you know, when I got sober and I did my first inventories, I had low self-esteem because I had so much shame, guilt, and remorse personally. And I run into that with newcomers. They feel that way about themselves. And they got to get past that. I'm not a person that believes in beating yourself up. That is shame, guilt, and remorse is useless. You know, fear. No, those are the, you know, I hear somebody say, I'm afraid. That's fear. So what's the answer to fear? It's you have to rely on a higher power and have some faith, but always have a plan. I'm a big guy on plans. It's like, if something doesn't go right, you go to a New Year's Eve party, whatever, have a way to get out, have some phone numbers. Don't lock yourself in a corner if you're going to be uncomfortable. Not that you're going to drink, but why be uncomfortable? So for me, it's about that. And I don't mind being selfish that way to a point. I mean, it doesn't mean I get to be like that all the time. I didn't do that at my daughter's weddings or their receptions, but I was always thinking about how I was. Was I uncomfortable or not? And I wasn't, because I have all these tools that I learned in AA. And that's what I kind of talk about, is the tools. The more tools you get in that toolkit, the better you are walking through life. You know, and you don't need an escape from the reality, because you're not creating a bad reality anymore. If you know where your character defects are and you know what you're prone to do, then you're working on them. Maybe not perfectly, but you're working on them. You're not saying no, never. You're saying, okay, I got to do better next time. There's a whole difference. So that's the mindset change that takes me away from my alcoholic mind and into recovery. FS.
Mickey Alcoholic.
Mickey. Hey.
So there's one of them words. So, my dad was a pretty strong character, and
He did not like that word. And I'm sure that he got hammered by that word from his dad or his boss or somebody, because whenever I use the word assume, y'all ever had that in your house? What does the word assume mean? I mean, you made an ass out of you and me. That's what my dad would say. Don't ever assume anything. Then you make an ass out of you and me. Yeah, I kind of chuckle about that because, I mean, listen to it. Assuming we are spiritually fit. So here's me, okay? Because we're just talking about me for right now. So, and I got a crazy mind. And I'm disruptive a lot. And I get angry. I'm off the beam, whatever. Am I going to ask myself, well, if I'm spiritually fit enough to go do this? What do you think my answer is going to be? If I'm asking myself, like, if I assume I'm spiritually fit, hell yeah, let's go, right? So let's talk about somebody. Let's talk about Jim for a minute. I know y'all probably like, who the hell is Jim? Okay, well, Jim went to work on a Tuesday because most alcoholics don't go to work on a Monday. So he showed up on work on a Tuesday. And he said, I had a few words with the boss and it didn't turn out very well. And Jim went to a bar or a roadside bar where he used to sell cars at. And he had whiskey with some milk because he had a few words with the boss. He said it was nothing serious, right? He probably thought he was spiritually fit. He thought he could find a guy to buy a car in that place. He probably thought he was spiritually fit. That's another thing that I've often thought about is, like, who am I to judge what is serious and what is not? Who am I to judge what I'm supposed to call my sponsor when my feathers get ruffled and not? Because Jim didn't call his sponsor on the way to the roadside bar, and he got drunk. And I can tell you, if I ever go out and get drunk again, it's not going to be pretty. And I've often contemplated that, and like from the very beginning, like what would happen when I come back? I don't know if I would or not. I mean, I really don't. And it's not worth the risk. I got to make sure I take every precaution possible. So what I'm saying is, assuming we are spiritually fit, maybe before I go on an errand like that, I should call somebody and run the situation by them and see what they think. Because people that are outside the woods can see in the trees pretty good. Whereas when I'm in the woods, I can't see my way out. I think I'm done.
All right, thank you, Mickey. All right, this brings us to the last part of this. Number 5 begins on page 19. I'll go through all of them, page 19 and page 102, and it ends on page 103, part of the paragraph. But none of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupation, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. Your job now is to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth or such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives and God will keep you unharmed. And finally, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
Won't read alcoholic. Yep. That's graduate level AA, if you ask me right there. That's what it's all about. Being of service. That's not something that comes to my mind right away. I mean, I literally have to go through a process of thinking and working on whatever's bugging me and do a little inventory to where I ever get to that last thought about, oh, can I help somebody with this? You know, I'm still self-centered. I wouldn't say that it drives everything, but it's not my first reaction to what's going on in my life. Can I be of service? But I do, when I do my end of the day inventory, I do look at one of the things. What did I miss today? What situations, interactions with people did I have where, you know, I might have missed a cue. I might have missed something. And, you know, just doing that, helps me when I'm in situations with people to even think like that. It's like retraining my mind. I don't have fear today about drinking. And I know newcomers, though, I think in their first year, I often talk to them about till you get through a whole four seasons, all the holidays, all the birthdays, all the things that you've done, until you get past all of them and you've walked through with sobriety, then you know that what's going to come. And the second time you go through them, it's different. You're okay. You're going to be better if you've worked steps and you got a higher power you can rely on and you've got the toolkit full. You're going to be okay. And I tell them that, but I'm thinking that about me too. I need that reminder. It's one of the reasons I've been sober since 1989, about 7 months after him. And he likes to call me a newcomer, but I got sober in August of 1989. And for me, you know, that amount of time doesn't mean a thing. I've been active in AA that entire time. I've always had a home group and I've always been active. Have I been Mr. AA? No. Have I tried to be Mr. AA? No. What I've done is I've needed to be in AA. I've made a conscious effort because I need to hear how people work their program. It wouldn't take me very long and I would reprogram myself. I would be right back there fighting life, you know, living on self-will and fighting life, literally in a knockdown, drag out fight with everyday life, trying to get my way. And that's the pattern for me in my past that always led to a need for an escape from reality into that fantasy land of drinking. Those neon lights and loud jukeboxes, that's what I got out of that. I got an escape from reality. And the thing is, you know, step two, we talk about in the word insane. And I, for a long time, I said, I'm not insane. I have problems. But yeah, okay, I did the same thing expecting different results. So yeah, I was insane with that regard. But no, I now know I preferred that alcoholic fantasy world to reality. And that's what makes me insane, is that I wanted that more than I wanted reality. And I confused the two. I thought that was the better reality when that in fact wasn't reality at all. So for me, that's what an alcoholic mind does to me. So I need to stay grounded in AA. I need to guard against that complacency. And that's what I do. And this way I don't work a perfect program, but I've always had a home group and I've always been active. And I tell that to people I work with. That's what's worked for me. You might find something different for you. Don't try to make my program for them. Now, there's all kinds of sponsors. There's the pamphlet talks about that. There's no right or wrong. There's just, it's what's comfortable and what works for that. You know, there's people that control things. There's people that don't control things. And they both work in different situations. Ideally, it depends on the person and where they're at. So I kind of like to think about the newcomer. I think about how it works with them, you know, and I try to do what I can. Sometimes it's not a good fit for me. And there have been times I've said, can't sponsor you anymore. You know, you're lying to me so much that it's causing me to get resentments. And I let go, you know, and other people say that I shouldn't do that. I've had people say, no, you never give up on a drunk. You just don't do that. But for me, my recovery comes first too. So that's just a personal choice that I've made. And, you know, I don't criticize others for not making that choice, but got to do what's right.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Mickey alcoholic.
Mickey.
And I hurt Walt's feelings when I told him you're the newcomer. So now I just tell them, I remember when I thought like that about 8 months ago. and, you know, that in that paragraph right there, first of all, like intellect can be a big detriment to sobriety. And I didn't have to worry about that because I'm pretty much, and especially in the beginning. So when it came to words like vocation, I didn't know what that meant. So I had to look it up. And I have the definition written here in my study guide, and it tells me what it means. And right after that, it talks about work, right? And what I really like is in the beginning, it says, in the beginning of the book, it says, a plan of recovery described in this book. And then it says, when it's talking about altruistic, it said, now then it turns from a plan of recovery to a movement. Now it has become a movement. And this is the first time that they use the word work. And it really is work. Because people, it's a life and death thing. And it can be really taxing. And if you don't believe me, read what that doctor wrote in his prescription on there. And it says in there that the two of you men who have heard your stories, if you would have admitted yourself to as patients in this hospital, I would have avoided you like the plague if I could have, because people like you are too heartbreaking. And that's what he thought. That's what he thinks. That's what people think about alcoholism, because alcoholism kills way more people than it releases. And, you know, being in this room, we're the lucky ones. No matter what, how you're feeling right now, you could be feeling like your life's over. But I guarantee you that if you just hold on to your seat and you do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, things will change and you will not be looking like that in a year or a month or 2 months or whatever. Because God's here and God provides exactly what we need, exactly when we need it. But we have to be open to it and we have to work for it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Mickey. All right, that wraps that up. Thank you, guys. We're going to pass the seven tradition baskets. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that may divert us from our primary purpose, to keep the alcoholic, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Let's see. Our group endeavors to provide safe meeting for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure, welcome environment. Anybody have any announcements? James?
Yep, I'm James, alcoholic.
Hi, James.
Next Monday night, right here in this supper room speaker. The supper's going to start at 6 o'clock. Potluck, bring a dish. And at 7 o'clock, we're going to have from Tobaccoville, North Carolina. We'll be coming down to speak. We might want to get here early and get a spot because it's where a lot of people here. Bring some. Welcome everybody.
Buddy.
That's all.
Anybody else got any announcements? AA announcements? Ben?
Ben? The usual whiskey pot. I'm happy to have it. If you guys want to get a team together, and we can take some of our balls, do a whole running and go. You know, why not?
But you did okay.
Also, the conference is going to be held at the University of Virginia. Anyways, if you guys want to have.
Thank you, Ben. Anybody else got any announcements? All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. Literature over here, if anybody's if it folds, it's free. Any of the books, you can see me or one of the home group members afterwards if you're interested in one of the books. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or any of our home group members after the meeting. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website at simpleactions.net. We also have meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Stella's on Colonial Avenue, which is down the street. And then thanks again to our speakers, Mickey, and then James has the last two paragraphs on 164.
He's an alcoholic, but obviously you cannot have a guy that your relationship is right and great event to pass countless others. Great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. In the fellowship of the Spirit, you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then.
We got a great way to close the meeting.
We talked so much, they're going to kill me.
What's up, my brother?
Who brought us here? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory forever and ever. Amen. Amen.